The Blind Californian, quarterly magazine of the California Council of the Blind, Winter 2013, Volume 57, Number 1, published in Braille, large print, cassette, email at bc-subscribe@ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Recorded by the volunteers of the Northern California Studio of Learning Ally, formerly Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. Donna Pomerantz, President, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036, phone 626-844-4388, or donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 1303 J Street, Suite 400, Sacramento, California, 95814-2900. Toll-free 800-221-6359. Voice 916-441-2100. Fax 916-441-2188. Email ccotb@ccbnet.org. Website www.ccbnet.org. San Francisco Bay Area Office, Catherine Skivers, 836 Rosetta Street, Hayward, California, 94545-2120. Phone 510-357-1986 or cathie.skivers@ccbnet.org. Los Angeles Area Office, Donna Pomerantz, 715 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036. Phone 626-844-4388 or donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Jeff Tom, Director, Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, toll-free 800-221-6359, cell 916-995-3967, governmentalaffairs@ccbnet.org. Webmaster@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, 1550 Bancroft Avenue, number 113, San Leandro, California, 94577-5264, phone 510-357-1844, or editor@ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided by phone in English and Spanish at 800-221-6359, Monday through Friday, after 4 p.m., and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription, send a blank message to connection-subscribe@ccbnet.org or on the web at ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to ca.connection@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language. I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a nonprofit charitable organization in California, the sum of blank dollars or another way to be used for its purposes on behalf of blind persons. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you. In accepting material for the Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is under 3 pages or 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the spring 2013 issue of The Blind Californian is noon, March 1, 2013. Please send all address changes to the Executive Office. Table of Contents, Reflections on 2012 in the CCB Family by Donna Pomerantz, page 2. Governmental Affairs Report by Jeff Tom, page 9. Wearing My Heart Out on My Unemployment Sleeve by Vita Savoy, page 12. Analysis and Personal Perspectives, a look at the 2012 Fall CCB Conference and Convention by Tuan Nguyen, page 19. Summaries of Minutes by Gabe Griffith, Secretary CCB, page 33. 2012 CCB Resolution Summaries by Jeff Tom, page 42. Letter to the Editor by Ken Stewart, page 45. Awards Time Again by Roger Peterson, Awards Committee Chair, page 47. CCB Membership Awards by Ardis Bazin, CCB Membership Chair, page 50. 2012 Fall Membership Seminar by Ardis Bazin, page 51. CCB Officers and Directors for 2013, page 53. Page 2, Reflections on 2012 in the CCB Family, Donna Pomerantz. This has been a very eventful year. Much has happened. And, of course, every year history is made within the CCB. For those who may not know as of yet, the California Council of the Blind will be moving toward having one conference and convention a year in spring 2014. That decision was made by vote of the membership assembled at convention on November 3 at the San Diego Del Mar Marriott Hotel. This decision is not easy to make. However, I know each of you will do your part to make it work, regardless of where you stand on the issue. Beginning in January, the logistics of this decision will be examined, and yes, this will be brought consistently to you, the lifeblood of the CCB family. Please use the following available avenues to keep informed. By phone or by email subscription, you can keep up on the news from the California Connection. Call after 4 p.m. or on weekends at 1-800-221-6359. Or subscribe by accessing the link at ccbnet.org/calcon.htm. Also, please keep up on reading your Blind Californian, as I may be able to put some information there as well. You may also read information from our Constitution and Bylaws Committee, and possibly our Conference and Convention Committee as time passes. We'll place information on the list from time to time, so be diligent in keeping informed. Page 3. In our previous issue of RBC, I shared the importance of the committees of the CCB, as that is where a lot of the work of the Council is done. On that note, I wish to state that I am very proud of each board member who has stepped up to the plate and shown in action that they are supportive of the work of the CCB by agreeing to chair one of our hard-working committees. This is a huge encouragement to me personally, as it is imperative that our entire board choose to lead by example, and this is a great end to 2012 and a running start to 2013. We have CCB family members who have also agreed to chair committees, and for that I am very thankful. By the time you read this article, the board will have made their decision about MUTSTRUT 2013. Four regions have submitted bids. Many are stepping forward to work the ground that is our CCB. It is during times of change and uncertainty that we all find out how strong our friends and family really are. I am sure that I will continue to be very proud, as I am already, of the show of strength, unity, and focus the family members who have already chosen to step forward and state their willingness to be an active part of moving our CCB forward through these times of change. Page 4. I would like to end this article with a message from a woman of action on our Seniors with Vision Loss Committee and her call for members. Bonnie's message says it all, and I wish to end my column with her words. Please read them carefully, and I hope her phone and email get many messages. The second half of the apple is the sweetest. Appreciate your apple. Help others enjoy theirs. Your time and talents can touch lives. Dear CCB chapter and affiliate members, everyone has something valuable to offer CCB. Are you a member seeking an opportunity to make your future bright and assist a growing population of potential new members? Have you accumulated some years of wisdom, say over 50? Then be proud and consider putting those years to good use. How? By checking out opportunities to volunteer for our Seniors with Vision Loss Committee. Match your skills and interests with some work that needs to get done, either as a committee member or as part of a larger network. If our beloved CCB is to survive and thrive, we must reach out more to the increasing numbers of visually impaired people over age 50. Page 5 below are some examples of how you can get involved. Our organization welcomes all ages and interests. Part of our wonderful diversity is that we all don't have to be interested in all the same things, yet it has been our sad observation that there is a real lack of senior pride even among our senior members. Such a lack of pride is not in our self-interest. Please remember that adopting society's stereotypes about getting older is like buying into those same negative stereotypes regarding persons with vision loss. Plus, when you think about it, aging is still the preferred alternative. So rather than avoiding the senior word, doesn't it make more sense to be proactive and pitch in? 5 ways to get involved. 1, be your chapter's or affiliate's go-to person for accessing community resources. Get to know your local area, compile and maintain a list of pertinent resources, especially those most needed by newly visually impaired persons, such as how to find an agency for those with vision loss, paratransit, grocery stores and restaurants that deliver, and so on. Share them in your meetings or when you learn of a person grappling with vision loss and needing help. 2, be an idea resource person to the committee, supplying and helping carry out fresh ideas for convention programs or doable projects. Page 6. Some projects have included or could include the Failing Sight and the Family Plight booklet and a new booklet being developed. A project may be ongoing or time limited. We always welcome new ideas for convention programs and speakers, but may need your help to pull them off. 3, linkage between seniors and your committee or affiliate. Help us provide important connections between seniors and a special interest group you already belong to. Obvious examples are the affiliates AMC and CCCLV. Specific committees we need to interface with more include technology, membership, and public relations, as well as publications. Your prime interest may still be your committee or affiliate, but you can liaison or be connected to the concerns and projects of the seniors committee. For example, we need to reach far more persons from diverse cultures in our state in order to implement our projects. We need a great deal of technology assistance. Please think about how you can be of service. 4, sharing your experiences of community integration and public education. This has long been one of the main goals of the Seniors Committee. We want full participation in places such as senior centers, houses of worship, civic groups, neighborhood associations, work and volunteer positions, and more. Many of us are successfully interacting in these settings. Page 7. Occasionally, we may have to overcome barriers, practical and attitudinal, to this participation, but we in the sighted public can't benefit from those experiences if we keep them to ourselves. When we achieve effective integration, we often educate the public just by our positive presence. When we let others know how things went, we promote another goal of helping ourselves and others. How to share? By telling of our integration experience in a chapter meeting to those we're trying to educate, by writing an article for the BC, and eventually on our web page or newsletter, long-range goals. You don't have to be on a committee to do these important activities, but we would like to hear from you. 5, help us with your knowledge and skills to eventually develop and update our seniors' webpage. Even though many newly visually impaired seniors cannot effectively read websites and newsletters, their families and friends can, though other types of media need to be provided to this group. It remains true that today, the Internet is the way most people communicate. A long-term goal is to develop a group of volunteers to gather, write, and post interesting information on a seniors committee webpage on the CCB website. Page 8. Such information can be on a variety of subjects and would need to be constantly reviewed and updated. A similar thing could be said for a possible e-newsletter. In addition to benefiting seniors, it's easy to see how such material could assist our larger organization with things like fundraising, public relations, and education. It's also clear that many dedicated and skilled technology wizards, writers, interviewers, and others are essential. None of this can get accomplished without the volunteers to do the work. Grandiose as this may all sound, it is possible with effective coordination and many talented volunteers. Do you choose to accept this mission possible? Consider being on the Seniors Committee or be part of our larger network. Call Bonnie Rennie or email her. Let's talk and see if this is for you. Please keep in mind our president appoints committee members. Our future is in large part up to us. There are important contributions you can make. We need a diverse statewide network of people wishing to enhance their second half of life. So please make that call, drop that note, make your mark in CCB and make it matter. Join us as we celebrate our seniority. Thank you, Bonnie Rennie. CCB Seniors with Vision Loss Committee. Phone 714-771-2397 or email bonnierennie@att.net. Page 9, Governmental Affairs Report, Jeff Tom. When I began writing this column, I did so with the thought that this would be the shortest column I submit until perhaps next year at this time. However, as I progressed, I realized that either I write too much or there really is a fair amount to say. You, the reader, can be the judge. In Sacramento, the mantra may as well be out with the old and in with the new. By the time you read this, the new legislative session will be in full swing as it actually starts on December 3. Although unless something out of the ordinary happens, other than electing legislative leaders and introducing a few bills, the action won't really begin until January. However, the November election did provide some results that will greatly impact what happens during the upcoming 2013-14 legislative session. First, with the adoption by the voters of Proposition 30, which imposes a temporary income tax increase on high-income earners and a temporary sales tax increase, cuts on state and local services, most of which would have fallen on education, and to a lesser degree public safety, have been avoided. Page 10. Of course, this is only one piece of the state's revenue pie. In early January, the release of the governor's proposed budget for the 2013-14 fiscal year will give the administration's view of what the total revenue projections look like and the impact either positively or negatively on government programs. In determining how things will look for California, we must also remember that the outcome of the current fiscal cliff crisis will impact the state's revenue. In this context, it must be understood that if negotiations between the president and Congress are unsuccessful, not only will across-the-board cuts in federal programs be required, including funding for Medi-Cal, rehabilitation services, and education, but also there is a potential for another economic downturn. Both of these factors could have serious impacts on how much revenue the state receives. On the other hand, cuts in so-called entitlement programs such as Medicaid are on the table, and it is possible that the outcome of these negotiations could still mean reduced revenue to the state. Moreover, there's no guarantee that social services and employment programs, such as funding for rehabilitation, will not be affected. Before turning to discussion of what CCB may be doing in the year to come, let me mention one other result of the November elections, the impact of which remains to be seen. Page 11. The California Assembly will be controlled by a two-thirds majority of Democrats. Moreover, although we won't know for certain until the occurrence of a couple of special elections that will occur early next year, due to state senators being elected to Congress, it is possible that the Senate will also have a two-thirds Democratic majority. Although a budget can be passed by a simple majority, almost all revenue measures require a two-thirds vote. If the Democrats have such a majority in both houses, will they consider raising additional revenue? Remember that revenue need not come in the form of taxes, but can also be raised through fees or other mechanisms. As a longtime impartial observer of Sacramento, I can only say that there is certainly going to be more pressure put on the legislature to maximize revenues, just as there is pressure to ensure that no new burdens are imposed upon the taxpayers. As to CCB's agenda for next year, one thing we can count on is that budget issues will crop up on which we will need your help. They may relate to items that we fought during the last session, such as library services, the California School for the Blind or Disabled Student Program funding for community colleges and state universities. On the other hand, we could find that we need to become involved in issues we hadn't even anticipated. Whatever the case, your letters, phone calls, and emails will be essential to our success. We will be seeking at least one legislative change based on a resolution adopted at our fall convention. It is our goal to enable guide dog schools located outside of California to provide in-home training and follow-up services to California residents if they meet prescribed standards. You will be hearing more on this during 2013. In addition, there are always a variety of legislative proposals that we support or oppose during the year, and I will keep you as informed as I can about them. Finally, I strongly encourage you to let me know of anything relating to governmental affairs you think is important for persons who are blind or who have low vision. You can always contact me at 916-995-3967 or by email at jeff.thom@ccbnet.org. Page 12. Wearing my heart out on my unemployment sleeve, Vida Zavoli. Editor's note. Vida needs little introduction to most of you. An active member in the San Francisco chapter and a founding member of the Contra Costa chapter, and recently appointed as chair of the technical operations group, if Vida is in a room, you know it, and the heart in her title is large and warm indeed. Page 13. After working for 28 years in the technology field in a variety of positions, I found myself unemployed in 2010. My employer at the time had given me a rare gift, the knowledge that my position was to be terminated 6 months before it happened. Armed with this information, I should have been pounding the proverbial pavement immediately. However, knowing that I had never had trouble finding a job before and that I knew lots of people in the industry, I simply glided along for those 6 months without a major plan. Well, the state of our economy at the time and the fact that I was now almost 50 years old should have hit me over the head, but sometimes the head would prefer to avoid reality. So on I went into the unemployment abyss, having to learn a new way of life. I'm writing this article to share with you what I learned during my 2 years of job hunting. Mainly, that just as important as finding a job is taking care of yourself while looking for one. Employment specialists, recruiters, and others in the field will undoubtedly have additional ideas. But free for nothing, you get my personal perspective. Page 14. Take from it what works best for you. I started with all of the usual suggestions. Sign up for all of the job search sites online. Apply for everything. Go to as many interviews as you can. Get an account on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and other sites. Keep a job-seeking journal. Network, network, network. After all, as the saying goes, looking for a job is a full-time job. Then, in sprucing up my resumes and cover letters, I kept in mind that what I've accomplished will always be a part of my success story, even those that did not appear in these documents. So I wrote an accomplishment list that I would review before interviews. These might include such items as taking courses that did not lead to certification or a degree, though they provided important knowledge, excelling in a sport, relocating, being a parent, volunteering to help start a program, do a fundraiser, or begin a new group. While filling out those options and applications and making changes to resumes for specific jobs, I had to fight the distractions at home, such as food, television, and all of those things that all of a sudden seem more interesting or important than what I was doing. Page 15. To avoid some of those distractions, try playing relaxing music in the background. Set up the computer in a part of the house where a door can be closed, where you may hear birds and so forth. Bring the laptop to a library, cafe, or other space away from home. Store the information on a thumb drive and use another computer at a local agency. Well, by this point, I was spending way too much time being cooped up, so I decided that once a day I had to get outdoors. It could be something as simple as grocery shopping or taking a ride on public transit. Tasks such as volunteering time and joining groups are also a means of getting outdoors while contributing to the community at the same time. Some ideas are volunteer in the community, such as a library, church, consumer organization, and so forth. Attend city hall meetings. Attend courses or seminars to keep updated in your field or just to have fun. Join groups to improve a craft, such as dancing, knitting, and so on. Get involved in a sport. Now it was time to make changes in my life due to change in income. Page 16. Don't worry, be happy. Everything will turn out okay. Trust the universe. All good mantras. But I realized that these things don't occur independent of me. I had to make it happen. Instead of eating out on Friday nights, my husband and I began playing Scrabble games and making popcorn. Consider the following. Creating a weekly / monthly budget. What's required? Electricity, gas, water, heating, groceries, guide dog expenses, and so on. What can you do without? Cable, 2 phone numbers, Netflix, farmer's market? Consider eating out less, buying during sales, attending inexpensive functions, free entertainment, sailing, concerts, festivals. Along with getting outdoors, it was time to set additional goals for myself. Here was a perfect time to stop making excuses and begin doing those things I convinced myself I didn't have time for when I was working. I got a guide dog, lost weight, began exercising, took the course to get my NLS Braille transcription certification, slowly cleaned out the clothes closet and gave to shelters. I found consulting work, which, although temporary, still afforded me some helpful monetary resources. Page 17. Preparing for an interview is a big task. Besides some of the general considerations, such as what to wear, how do I get there, and what do I bring, come the responsibilities of reviewing the employer's website, thinking of questions for the interviewer, and reviewing notes from other interviews. I created a to-do list for an interview, including what to do when the interview was over, such as writing a thank you note and jotting down my impressions of what was different on this interview from others. I could then review these notes before another interview. Even after doing all of this, my mental power started to wane. I had to figure out what energized me. I began doing my best to keep body and mind strengthened by creating a list of small, inexpensive, or free treats as rewards for work goals completed, resisting sitting in front of the computer all day, finding a buddy to check in with every week, surrounding myself with people who encouraged me and were honest. But inevitably, the big monster called depression finally came along. Now I had the choice to either view it as the enemy or a motivator. The enemy tells me that I'll never find a job since employers are receiving 500 resumes for the one I applied for. Page 18. I've had too many rejections. Those darn applications online take me too long to complete. I get very few or no return phone calls or emails. I'm embarrassed to write unemployed on medical office and other applications. I have no money to take a vacation. My friends that currently have a job have stepped back. Family doesn't understand. This can all cause physical discomfort as well as mental. Allow yourself to express your feelings in the comfort of your own space. Depression, the motivator, can be used to fuel you. Call those people who make you laugh, join a support group, or see a counselor. Read an exciting book, sing and dance along to music, cook a good meal, garden, spend time with pets, sit outside in the sun, go to the park. I began keeping a gratitude journal to remind myself of all I have to be thankful for. Even writing just 3 things a day was helpful. This journal also contained my negative feelings, but I wouldn't let them outweigh the positive. Along with depression came the feeling of lack of fulfillment. This feeling can be strong when people in your house leave for work every morning, or maybe when someone else is frequently offering to pay for your meal. Find a way to contribute. Do the shopping or laundry. Be the organizer of outings. Propose inexpensive functions. Page 19. Think of what skills you have to barter with. The big challenge was taking stock once a month. In this review, I needed to be honest with myself. This is not something I would need to share with anyone else. I asked myself, where am I in my job search? Did I acquire more skills? Am I getting out of the house? How many jobs have I applied for? Have I joined a group or volunteered my time? What changes have occurred in my life? What new items can be added to my resume or cover letter? What accomplishments have I made? Where am I now? I have recently signed a 1-year contract with Oracle, Inc. to evaluate and test software for accessibility. Even though this job is part-time and does not offer benefits, it is steady work and a good opportunity to network internally, build my skills, and have a good name on my resume. The hope is that this will become a full-time job. Being unemployed frequently conjures up frightening times ahead. Use creativity and challenge to take care of yourself. Page 20. Analysis and Personal Perspectives. A look at the 2012 Fall CCB Conference and Convention. Tuan Nguyen. Editor's note, we first published an article by Tuan, my very first ACB convention experience, in the spring 2010 issue of the BC, for which he received an honorable mention from the awards committee. Now age 27, he has just been elected president of the California Council of Blind Students. Here are a few words from Tuan about his background. My family and I immigrated to the United States in 1993 as political refugees. My dad was a lieutenant in Vietnamese Navy, and shortly after the fall of Saigon on April 30, 1975, he was captured by North Vietnamese forces, and they put him in a concentration camp, enduring harsh labor for over 5 years. During the 1980s, the U.S. government allowed Vietnamese prisoners of war, along with their families such as my own dad and my whole family, to come to the U.S. as political refugees. I am so glad to be here in this country, away from a territory where there is no established democracy and where I did not obtain the quality education I deserve. Upon arriving in the U.S., I was diagnosed with Usher's syndrome. I obtained the essential skills of a blind human being, such as braille literacy, mobility and orientation, daily living skills, and other fundamentals necessary to my adult life today, despite the challenges. Page 21. I am currently an undergraduate student at California State University, Sacramento, majoring in physics with a minor in mathematics. As of this writing, I am almost completing my degree, and I am planning, if at all possible, to stay at SCU Sacramento to obtain a master's in mathematics. My career goal is in the field of high school math, physics teaching, and possibly community college teaching. My hobbies are traveling to new places, hiking, camping, gardening, performing fun home-based scientific experiments, boating, and cross-country skiing. Finally, a member of the CCB Capital Chapter, I am proud to be a part of the CCB for almost 10 years. Once again, delegates, members, and friends of the California Council of the Blind, CCB, as a family assembled for the fall conference and convention in a beautiful place of Del Mar located in San Diego. The Del Mar Marriott Hotel was one of the best venues I have been to over the recent years, so navigable and rectangular in shape, making it very easy to get from place to place. Instead of the usual convention reports you've read in past years, I hope to give more of an analysis and my personal perspectives and less of a report. Page 22. I hope that doing so will wake people up to attend future conventions while simultaneously demonstrating to the readers that the writer has some level of intellectual abilities. Additionally, with respect to the general sessions, I only highlight some speakers, not only because of space constraints, but because it provides extra room for me to present personal perspectives and analysis on this unforgettable or possibly historical gathering. The convention and conference lasted for 4 days, from Thursday, November 1st through November 4th. The theme was Following Our Vision in Challenging Times, which is a powerful one, signifying hopes, strengths, and above all, collectivity. I arrived at the San Diego airport shortly after 11 in the morning, took a ride on the super shuttle, checked in the hotel, picked up my pre-registration package, including the Braille version of the program, and settled down the rest of the afternoon. There were 3 pre-convention activities in the afternoon, such as a welcome party, the technology session on Apple devices, and the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCCLV session. I didn't attend any of them, not because I was uninterested, but because I was pretty exhausted from constant sleep deprivation due to my intense studies in physics and from taking 2 painful exams on 2 consecutive days just prior to my arrival. Page 23. Instead, I rested for a little while by taking a nap. This hotel had CCB specials on its restaurant menu, really handy for those of us on a budget. After the fabulous meal, I went over to the Grand Ballroom for the evening CCB Board of Directors meeting, open to the general membership, which was delayed for almost 3/4 of an hour due to the executive session. All I can say is that the meeting was in a good warm atmosphere with the officers carrying out the duties in a professional manner, constantly having dialogues among themselves and occasionally with the audience acting as pundits from the floor. In general, this gathering is one of the few places where CCB members have the opportunity to sit down and carefully, directly scrutinize via their eyes and ears the functional activities and work within the board, as well as to ask questions and or to make comments directly. Otherwise, these meetings are closed to the public, as with the case of all executive sessions. In addition, this is where the folks can draw criticisms on the board's overall work, and is where they can judiciously determine whom he or she will vote for at future elections. Rather than enjoying myself at the hospitality hosted by the San Diego chapter, I climbed up to my room and crashed. Page 24. On the next day, Friday, after having a good night's sleep for well over 7 hours, recovering from about 5 hours from all the nights a few days before, there were some morning activities occurring concurrently before the start of the first general session. While the morning gatherings included credentials and resolutions committees, Committees on Access and Transportation, and CCCLV Joint Session, an Association for Multicultural Concerns, AMC Workshop, all of which I heard went smoothly and well. I, however, attended two other meetings, the Braille Revival League of California, BRLC, and the California Library Users of America, CLUA. In the first part of the BRLC meeting, presided over by President Steve Fort, everyone was doing the usual business, such as adopting minutes, reviewing financial reports, elections, among other duties. It was absolutely great to learn about this wonderful affiliate, and at the end of its session, I showed my love by proudly joining the group. Honestly speaking, Braille is indispensable in my life as a physics student, for without it, I do not know how I would succeed in an area of science that many CCB members consider the most scary and unimaginably difficult subject. So I hope I will bring new ideas to this group in the years to come. Page 25. After tackling technical difficulties that delayed for 15 minutes or so, we had Kim Charlson, First Vice President of the American Council of the Blind, ACB, Editor, Braille Revival League, Librarian, Perkins School, Watertown, Mass., on the phone via an external loudspeaker. She discussed the Unified English Braille, UEB, code. As of this writing, the Braille Authority of North America, BANA, has adopted the UEB while preserving the Nemeth code. Good news. Immediately following Kim Charlson's presentation, I stayed on for a little while for the next business meeting, which was CLUA, presided over by President Judy Wilkinson. As with the BRLC event earlier that day, members were executing the traditional tasks, as well as talking at some length regarding how to effectively improve the affiliate's overall financial health. In my opinion, this is extremely important in maintaining and strengthening the financial resources for this and any affiliate slash chapter within the CCB, or the CCB itself for that matter. On the other hand, it has well over 45 members, which is wonderful to hear, and I hope it will continue to grow further down the road. During the lunch break, some members headed to the respective luncheons offered by the convention. I instead went down to the lower level of the hotel, browsing around the exhibit hall. Page 26. I went through virtually all table booths, but I spent the majority of the time at the Optelec booth examining the latest state-of-the-art high-tech devices for blind individuals, such as refreshable Braille displays and standalone scanners. While there, I asked the representatives about the future scanners that can take pictures of any highly complex, technically sophisticated materials of physics and advanced mathematics, allowing someone like me to independently scan and read them without relying on 5 or even 7 human readers per semester. They took down notes and will ask the company to look into that, and hopefully in the future, Optelec will develop a scanner that can snap all technical books with mathematical expressions and equations. On Friday afternoon, the conference and convention officially got underway and proudly roared with the first general session presided over by the First Lady of the ACB, President of the CCB, Donna Pomerantz. After delivering the invocation, the Pledge of Allegiance, important announcements, and other internal matters, there were a number of presenters during this assembly. All were very interesting and unquestionably fascinating. I am highlighting 2 of the speakers. Page 27. First, Judge David M. Zamowski delivered a speech entitled Success Through Education, Technology, and Perseverance. To me, he is someone who is highly inspirational, intelligent, and knowledgeable, and he is no doubt a highly respected, honored jurist. Being blinded in the Vietnam War, he received his Doctor of Jurisprudence from Denver University School of Law in 1973 and currently is assigned to the San Diego Probate Court. Judge Szymanski discussed at length his law school challenges, employment experiences, motivation, networking, ambition, law practice obstacles, both as a former deputy district attorney and a current judge, and adaptations. One of the topics he mentioned was how he utilizes his sense of hearing in telling the credibility of witnesses who appear before him. Additionally, he pointed out the importance of enjoying what you are doing in life is necessary in determining a good road toward a career success. The last item of the afternoon was a panel of three individuals, including Christy Goldenberg, Joshua, and Joshua's father, a discussion entitled The Joshua Project, and I found it quite inspiring, and it felt like you learned something from this wonderful family's perspective, facing emotional challenges of raising a blind child with bilateral microphthalmia and optic nerve maldevelopment. Page 28. As a family, they've made substantial changes in order for Josh to adapt new skills, as well as having Josh learn to read and write in Braille, which I strongly believe are indisputably essential for all aspects of this blind child's success in future life, ranging from academic growth to social development. In general, I have no doubt that Josh will have great potential. Upon the adjournment of the first general session, there were a number of late afternoon activities, such as the First Timers Seminar, the CCB Constitution and Bylaws Committee, the President's Dinner, among others. The evening assembly, presided over by First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., offered some special treats for everyone in attendance. After giving away some really sweet door prizes, shouting out important announcements, delivering the remembrance of CCB members who have passed away since the spring 2012 gathering, and the Credentials Committee report delivered by Pamela Pelagi, the first speaker was exceptionally valuable, especially to the blind community. An assistant clinical professor with the University of California San Diego Department of Ophthalmology at the Shiley Eye Center, Dr. Henry A. Ferreira, discussed at length the topic of treatment of diabetic macular edema, providing the audience a brief overview of the disease process of diabetes mellitus. Page 29, he then presented information on what is diabetic macular edema, DME, stating that it is the leading cause of blindness in the general population if the glycemic control is not well under control. Then he discussed the available treatment options out in the market, such as laser photocoagulation, antivascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF therapies, surgical vitrectomy, and so on. Finally, he provided the associated statistical data on success rates and risks. I found the delivery medically and scientifically fascinating, so I strongly encourage CCB members, when the convention's audio files are available on the CCB website, to relive this speech and all other general sessions' amazing presentations. Next, there were a couple of speakers, including Jeff Tom's legislative report, before President Donna Pomerantz delivered her semi-annual presidential report to the membership. In her remarks, she provided an overview of what the CCB has been doing since the spring gathering, and she seriously stated that there is still a lot of work to be done as long as the members are working collectively as a family. This is indisputably true, because if there is a lack of hand-holding collaboration among all members in the organization, how can we get all projects, essential programs, services, and so forth in an expeditious manner? Page 30. Remember, this is a grassroots consumer advocacy organization, as Donna stated in her report, where the membership serves as a vehicle which point out directions, approaches the CCB leaders to execute the necessary work on behalf of blind and visually impaired Californians. The final hurdles for the Friday evening were election of officers and board of directors. The following individuals were reelected, the majority of whom were by acclamation: President Donna Pomerantz, First Vice President Eugene Lozano Jr., Treasurer Peter Pardini, the Board of Directors, including Vincent Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon, and David Jackson. Congratulations to you all, and I wish you the very best in your respective administrations over the next 2 years. After a long, stressful day, I ascended to my room for the rest of the night while others were having relaxing moments at the hospitality room, and still others were doing business in the resolutions committee meeting. On Saturday, a multitude of activities in the morning included the CCB membership breakfast, Guide Dog Users of California, GDUC, business meeting, and a host of other committee meetings. Page 31. Since I am on the board of the California Council of Blind Students, CCBS, I attended its morning business session where I was elected president. Thanks to all who supported me, and I have many plans and ideas for my term. Our Jeopardy game afterward was so much fun. During the lunch break, while some members headed to their designated luncheons and others spent their final hours at the exhibit hall, I had a private lunch with coffee in my room and started working on my math homework before the third general session. The afternoon assembly, presided over by Second Vice President Roger Peterson, started out with the invocation, presentation of the colors, and the Pledge of the Allegiance, along with final announcements and resolving disputes. There were a couple of informative, interesting presentations, such as the fascinating history of Del Mar and issues relating to the Transportation Security Administration. Peter Pardini then took the microphone and talked briefly on the 2012 Mutt-Strutt report, stating that the CCB had raised well over $12,000. I'm delighted that our great organization had such a success, and I hope next year's Mutt-Strutt will be even better. The final item on the agenda for the session was the historical discussion slash debate and vote on constitutionally changing from two semi-annual conference and conventions to one annual gathering. Page 32. To my surprise, the debate slash discussion was pretty harmonious and peaceful, differing substantially from the 2009 gathering at the 75th anniversary in Fresno, where the members had a deeply heated debate, almost to the point of hostility. The single most contributing factor in the change of CCB members' minds is financial burdens for attending two gatherings annually. After a little debate and head-scratching, the majority of the members in attendance voted in favor of the constitutional amendment by voice vote, and this change is not going to take effect until 2014. Meanwhile, prior to the evening banquet, there were a number of committee meetings. I attended the Visual and Hearing Impaired Committee with Roger Peterson, David Hanlon, Mike Keithley, Donna Sanchez, among others in attendance. It was such a lively, warm congregation, and we discussed and brainstormed a number of ideas pertaining to the issues of improving and procuring new assistive learning devices needed by some conventioneers during general sessions and other meeting functions. I personally think this is highly indispensable because convention organizers would like to have everyone with sensory deficits enjoy and have full participation in all the gathering activities as their medically normal brothers and sisters do, in spite of financial limitations. Page 33. Dress conservatively in a good-cut charcoal gray suit, navy blue dress shirt, blue red striped tie, and black dress shoes, I, along with my fellow dressed-up members, walked to the grand ballroom for an amazingly wonderful banquet whose master of ceremonies was East Los Angeles chapter president Louis Herrera, a fun-making gentleman. The steak was so delicious, having a chance to use my super-sharp pointy knife, and I had an incredibly fabulous time with the lovely folks at my table, having great sweet conversations among ourselves. The guest speaker, our very own ACB President Mitch Pomerantz, gave a presentation of mixed topics, ranging from brief updates of the happenings at the national level to the importance of tight connection with the organization, particularly CCB or any blind consumer group one belongs to, in order to maintain strength and stability thereof. I was deeply moved by his speech and agreed with him 100%. After the fancy meal, a number of my companions and I rock and roll toward the hospitality room for the late night and well into the early morning hours of fun, mingles, and drinks, and we were all having a very good time together, celebrating our successes. Page 34. Sunday, the conference and convention's final half day, covered the morning devotional services, followed by a mini-general session dealing with the treasurer's report, resolutions, see summaries elsewhere in this issue, reports from various committees, along with the final announcements from affiliates and members. All in all, a historical fall conference and convention was a well-done, outstanding, markedly successful one, with numerous seminars, programs, and interestingly fascinating general session speakers that characterized its uniqueness. However, since the event is behind us, and with the fact that the members voted for an annual gathering, we now have to look into the future. Generally speaking, there is lots of work to be done down the road in this proudly great, wonderfully vibrant organization, ranging from strengthening bonds and communications between chapters and special interest affiliates to membership development and recruitment to fundraising. As long as all of us, the members, work collectively, collaboratively in a team, I'm sure we will overcome these challenges and will be strong and prosperous, thereby striving to increase the independence, security, equality of opportunity, and to improve quality of life for all blind and visually impaired Californians. Page 35, Summaries of Minutes, Gabe Griffith, Secretary CCB, April 12, 2012, Board Meeting. After President Donna Pomerantz called the meeting to order, Secretary Gabe Griffith called the roll. Present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Gene Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Immediate Past President Jeff Tom, Board Members Lena Bandy, Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, David Jackson, Linda Perel, Eric Smiley, Robert Wendt, and Judy Wilkinson. David Hamlin was absent with an excused absence. The board entered an executive session to discuss legal matters and the CCB office lease. It was decided to negotiate for an office lease at 1303 J Street in Sacramento. The board then exited executive session. There were several announcements and public comment. Much of the public comment had to do with the restaurant service and prices. The board then approved the minutes from January 25 and March 11, 2012. Page 36. Next, the board ratified an earlier email vote to subsidize hotel rooms for the convention. CCB will be subsidizing $12.88 per room for the spring 2012 convention. Peter briefly covered several financial documents. There were not any questions on these documents previously handed out to the board, so there was no discussion on them. It was decided to continue working with the same audit company we've been working with in the past to perform the 2011 audit. Peter then read the proposed 2012 budget. Projected income was $265,145, including a funds transfer from savings of almost $50,000. The total proposed expenses were $265,145. There were expenses not included in this budget, such as moving expenses that could be offset by landlord credits and funds for a strategic plan. It was moved to add $10,000 worth of income and expenses for a strategic plan. The proposed budget was approved. Judy read the report on the Newell Perry Trust Fund. As of March 30, 2012, the balance in this trust was $182,589.20. The report was approved. Jeff read the report on the Ellen Murphy Trust Fund. As of April 9, 2012, the balance in this fund was $244,948.76. Page 37, the report was approved. The board next adopted a document retention and destruction policy document. This document governs how long certain documents and records need to be kept and how to destroy others. Donna gave a publications committee report. This committee had no chair at the time of this report. Under guidance of Donna, Judy, and Roger, the committee is still making sure its work gets done. CCB had not been billed for the winter edition of The Blind Californian at the time of this report. Donna gave the numbers of how many copies of each version of the BC were published. The report was accepted. There was more public comment dealing mostly with budget thoughts. The meeting adjourned after this last public comment. May 30, 2012 board meeting, after President Donna Pomerantz called a meeting to order, Secretary Gabe Griffith called the roll. Present were President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Gene Lozano, Second VP Roger Peterson, Secretary Gabe Griffith, Treasurer Peter Pardini, immediate past President Jeff Tom, board members Lena Bandy, Artis Bazin, Vince Calderon, David Hanlon, David Jackson, Linda Perrell, Eric Smiley, Robert Wendt, and Linda Dardarian as a guest. Judy Wilkinson was absent. Page 38. The board entered executive session. It was decided to enter into a legal case against Rite Aid if Rite Aid was unwilling to enter into structured negotiations with CCB regarding accessible prescription information. Other personnel and legal matters were discussed. After exiting executive session, the meeting was adjourned. Spring 2012 CCB Conference and Convention Business Meeting. On Friday, April 13, Pam Pelagi gave the Credentials Committee report. There were 9 chapters or affiliates who were not seated at this convention. This was fewer than last fall, and Pam had made an effort to seat as many chapters as possible. The Credentials Committee report was adopted. On Sunday, April 15, Jeff Tom read the fall 2011 business meeting minutes for Gabe Griffith, who was absent. The minutes were approved with small additions. Peter Pardini gave a treasurer's report. He covered the budget report for 2011. The total income for that year was $184,637. The total expenses were $269,027. After including other income, CCB had a net loss for 2011 of over $115,000. Peter then discussed the proposed 2012 CCB budget that the board had approved on Thursday evening and that has been discussed earlier in this article. The treasurer's report was approved. Page 39, Roger Peterson gave a committee and bylaws committee report for Jerry Consolor, the committee chair, who was absent. Jeff Tom read a proposed amendment that would move CCB to having only one conference and convention per year. The reading was for discussion purposes only, and there was no discussion at this meeting. Roger mentioned that there are other possible amendments that the committee is considering. This committee report was approved. Jeff Tom then read the resolutions for this year. Resolution 2012-A1 was withdrawn. This resolution dealt with SB 198, which was the bill that dealt with autonomous vehicles. Resolution 2012-A2 had to do with judicial diversity. Resolution 2012-A3 was a thank you resolution to the volunteers. Resolution 2012-A4 was a thank you resolution to BART. Resolution 2012-A5 was a thank you to the hotel staff. The committee report was approved. Other committee reports, Artis Bazin reported that the membership committee is looking at other times than a breakfast to have a meeting at convention. They also want to make sure that each chapter has a couple of representatives on their email list. Page 40, Roger Peterson reported that there was a hearing and vision impaired committee meeting. They talked about ALD systems and other equipment. Mitch Pomerantz reported on the Employment Assistance Committee. He reported on no-interest loans that are available. Elena Thomason reported on the results of the pledge drive for Mutt Strutt that was taken on Friday evening. Kathy Skivers reported on the efforts of the History Committee and asked people to contact her if they have back issues of the BC or other CCB publications. Pam Metz is chairing the Domestic Violence and Hate Crimes Committee. She asked anyone who is interested in joining the committee to contact her. They would like to put on a self-defense seminar at a future convention. Jean Lozano gave a convention committee report. He asked for items people would like to see at future conventions and thanked everyone who worked on the event application. Jean asked for ideas for the joint CAT and CCCLV presentation. Pam Pelagi, chair of the Credentials Committee, offered her assistance to anyone who needs assistance with completing the credentials form. Page 41. Pam also gave the nominating committee report. The slate of people chosen was President Donna Pomerantz, First VP Jean Lozano, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Board Members Lena Bandy, Vincent Calderon, David Hanlon, David Jackson. Jeff Tom thanked the Governmental Affairs Committee and discussed Capitol Day. Donna Pomerantz gave a short Publications Committee report. There is still no chair for that committee. The Seniors with Vision Loss Committee is interested in recruiting members. Affiliate reports. Judy Wilkinson gave a report on the Orientation Center Alumni Group. They have many members, and she invited anyone who used to be a member and is no longer one to rejoin. Mitch Pomerantz asked everyone to recognize the work that Marlena Lieberg did over the weekend. Marlena thanked everyone for her experiences this weekend and for inviting her. She's also been helping the web streaming team. There were several public comments dealing with BC articles, helping others at conventions, when the next convention would be, and more. After public comment, the business meeting was adjourned. This concluded the Spring 2012 Conference and Convention of the California Council of the Blind. Page 42, 2012 CCB Resolutions Summaries. Jeff Tom. What follows are summaries of the resolutions adopted at the 2012 Spring and Fall CCB Conventions. Resolutions designated 2012A were adopted during the spring, and those designated as 2012B were adopted during the fall. Resolution 2012A2 urges Governor Edwin G. Brown, Jr. to include disability as one of the factors to be taken into account when making nominations to the state judiciary at all levels, to encourage interested and suitable candidates with disabilities to come forward and present themselves as candidates for judicial appointments, and to institute other outreach and recruitment efforts to identify and support suitable judicial candidates with disabilities. Resolution 2012A4 thanks and commends BART for their cooperation in granting permission for personnel and volunteers to assist convention attendees to get to and from the BART platform area in the Millbury Station to the location where the SFO Crown Plaza shuttle parks. Page 43, Resolution 2012A3 and 2012A5 thank the volunteers at the Spring Conference and Convention and the Crown Plaza SFO Hotel staff, respectively, for their outstanding work. Resolution 2012B1 provides that this organization seek legislation to allow guide dog schools outside of California that meet certification standards of the International Guide Dog Federation, in effect on January 1, 2014, to provide in-home training and follow-up services to California residents. Resolution 2012B2 provides that this organization enthusiastically endorses the Ann Sullivan Macy Act, proposed federal legislation which would enact various provisions relating to the education of children with visual impairments, and that this organization work for its enactment. Resolution 2012B3 urges Caltrans and local public works departments, when it is determined that a roundabout is to be constructed, to use guidelines specified in the resolution in order to maximize pedestrian safety and access, including the safety of persons who are blind or visually impaired. Page 44. The resolution also requires that a copy be sent to local, state, and federal agencies when appropriate and submitted to the American Council of the Blind for action at its 2013 conference and convention. Resolution 2012-B4 provides that this organization supports utilization of federal yellow as specified with at least 70% visual contrast with the surrounding surface as the contrast and exclusive color to be used for detectable warning and detectable directional surfaces at all platform edges, curb ramps, islands, or cut-through medians, bus stops, hazardous vehicular areas, reflecting pools and track crossings, as well as striping for the nosing of stairs. The resolution also requires that these recommendations be sent to local, state, and federal agencies when appropriate to ensure consistency in standardization and in use of these accessible elements in the built environment, and that a copy be submitted to the American Council of the Blind for consideration at its 2013 conference and convention. Resolution 2012-B5 provides that this organization explore approaches for ensuring that travel, medical, financial, and other facilities that use kiosks for check-in, prescription ordering, or other information gathering are required to install devices that are fully accessible to persons who are blind or visually impaired, and that the organization educate both the private and public sectors as to the economic and technological feasibility of the accessibility of self-service kiosks. The resolution also requires that a copy be sent to the American Council of the Blind for consideration at its 2013 conference and convention. Resolutions 2012-B7 and 2012-B8 thank the conference and convention volunteers and the San Diego Del Mar Hotel staff, respectively, for their outstanding work. Page 45. Letter to the Editor, Ken Stewart. Editor's note: Ken, longtime member of ACB's Publications Board and loyal member of the CCB and reader of the BC, presents an interesting letter, especially in light of the comments made by Judge David M. Zamowski at our fall convention concerning how he, too, as a blind judge, deals with judgments about witnesses. I was momentarily disappointed as I read Attorney Charles Navarette stating, "I was no longer able to select jury members effectively because of my vision loss," in his Fall Blind Californian article, My Journey to Blindness. Page 46. Then, as I read on, he described how he was later particularly skilled at judging the credibility of trial witness testimony from non-visual clues like nervous voice quality. I was reminded of a conversation many years ago with Dick Casey, who was the first blind judge to be appointed to the federal bench. As I have written about elsewhere, I shared with Dick an experience I had when presiding as a hearing officer for the New York State Department of Education. At the start of the second day of a hearing, the attorney for one of the parties asked me to recuse myself since I was unable to determine the credibility of witnesses due to my blindness. I declined to recuse myself, and later, mulling over that situation, I concluded that I was probably better at estimating truthfulness depending on non-visual clues like voice quality, as Mr. Navarette stated too, but also by picking up subtleties like the shuffling sounds of nervous feet under the table. Dick was reminded of his pre-appointment interview by a group of sitting judges who would become his colleagues in the federal court. One of the interviewers asked him how his blindness would hinder his effectiveness on the bench. Dick answered confidently that it would be an advantage in some ways, such as immunizing him from being influenced or distracted by irrelevancies, such as how well-dressed was a witness or their racial identity. Another judge in the interviewing group exploded with delighted recognition of Dick's point. He proceeded to recount a trial experience of his own. Lengthy testimony was presented by a particularly gorgeous woman. When she had finished, the judge could not recall anything she said. Page 47, awards time again. Roger Peterson, Awards Committee Chair. CCB presents several awards to deserving people and groups at our spring conference and convention, and it is time for us to start preparing for these presentations. Some of the awards are presented by the Awards Committee, and some are given by others. Here's an overview. Besides the awards that the Awards Committee presents, Publications Committee and the Membership Committee give awards. The Membership Committee's awards are described in the following article. The Publications Committee presents writing awards, usually based on articles written for the Blind Californian and chosen by vote of the committee. Page 48. The only part the general membership might play in this process would be to recommend an article for consideration that appeared in some other publication. You do, however, have a part to play in the presentation of awards by the Awards Committee. We need you to submit letters to the CCB office nominating people for these awards, so we will be presenting them to the most deserving people possible. These letters, directed to the Awards Committee, should be sent to the office by February 15, 2013. Here are the awards and their criteria. The CCB Hall of Fame. Up to 5 persons per year who've made significant contributions and sustained effort to advance the goals of CCB over a period of years may be nominated. The CCB Community Service Award, presented annually to a blind or visually impaired individual who, through his or her association and activities, has demonstrated integration into and interaction with the life of the community. The CCB Distinguished Service Award, given periodically to an outstanding blind or visually impaired person who has contributed significantly to the betterment of blind people in general. The recipient of this award need not be a member of CCB. Page 49. The CCB Legislator of the Year Award, bestowed periodically on a state or federal legislator who has introduced and successfully directed enactment of legislation on behalf of persons who are blind or visually impaired. The Humanitarian Award is granted to an individual or organization that has assisted blind people in general, or CCB and its affiliates in particular, to an extraordinary degree. The recipient may be blind or sighted. The CCB Merit Award, formerly the Certificate of Merit, given to any individual who provides outstanding volunteer service to CCB, its chapters, or affiliates. In closing, let me thank the members of the Awards Committee who have made the difficult decisions that we must make. They are Susan Hyatt, Mary Beth Randall, Catherine Skivers, and Michael Williams. Page 50, CCB Membership Awards. Artis Bazin, CCB Membership Chair. Is your chapter currently working on a project that will benefit your community? The Chapter of the Year Award is presented by the CCB Membership Committee at each spring convention to the chapter that conducts a group effort to make a significant difference in the life of an individual and or the community. Letters from chapters for projects developed and completed in 2012 should be submitted to the CCB State Office by February 15, 2013. In the letter, please explain the group chapter project, who benefited from the effort, and the timeline of the project. Provided we receive letters from chapters, we will present awards at the Spring Convention in 2013. We did not have any letters submitted for the 2011 award. The 2013 CCB Membership Incentive Awards will be announced at the banquet at the Spring Convention in Sacramento. Win one of the CCB Membership Incentive Awards in 2013. Awards will be presented to the chapter with the largest number of members added to membership and the other to the chapter with the largest membership percentage increase. Page 51, 2012 Fall Membership Seminar, Artis Bazin. The topic for the Fall CCB Convention Membership Seminar was how can the CCB Membership Committee assist chapters in building membership? We broached the topic with several questions. The first question was, how can we get chapters to work together in regional areas? Participants gave several answers, which would be excellent ways to connect with one another. Chapters could have regional membership seminars, regional socials, legislative/advocacy seminars, and fundraisers. Fundraisers might be hard to complete jointly, but local chapters can support other chapters' fundraisers. Another idea was to have joint chapter meetings with special speakers instead of having the same speaker going to several different chapters. A joint chapter technology conference could be of interest for younger blind people. The second question dealt with how conference calls could benefit chapters and affiliates. One suggestion would be to have an annual, at least, conference call for at-large members. Other suggestions were to have a call for chapters in Southern California, Northern California, for affiliates, and one specifically for leaders. Page 52, another requested having the membership committee work with other committees to have other focus calls for people interested in specific committees, membership, public relations, fundraising, and others. This might help more members get interested in joining specific committees. Another question asked, how can we get more people to keep interested in CCB when we go to one convention a year? Some of the same answers were already mentioned. Regional get-togethers, conference calls for members in special seminars. However, others said using Skype to include more people, using three-way for those without long distance, in-persons meeting with Skype available, having board members visit local chapters, and any communication which would lead to all CCB members feeling part of the organization. Many chapters can't afford to send delegates or prefer not to attend the conferences because of age or costs. Another participant asked about a new member handbook. CCB currently has a new member handbook, which is sent to new members once rosters are sent in to the state office. However, they are only sent to the new members if the new member is noted as a new member on the list. Several suggested the new member handbook be sent to chapter presidents so it can be distributed when a new member joins so they get the information right away. They would learn about CCB and would feel more like members. All chapter presidents aren't aware of the president's manual either. If you have questions about membership, please contact the membership committee. Page 53, CCB Officers and Directors, 2013. Editor's note. We are indebted to Bernice Kandarian, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms actually begin on January 1 following election. The presence of an asterisk or star means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. President Donna Pomerantz, 12 to 14, second term, Pasadena, California, 91106, home phone 626-844-4388, donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., star, 12 to 14, third term, Sacramento, California, 95841, eugene.lozano@ccbnet.org. Page 54, Second Vice President Roger Peterson, star, 11 to 13, first term, Mountain View, California, 94040, home, phone, 650-969-1688, roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Secretary Gabe Griffith, star, 11 to 13, third term, Concord, California, 94521, self, 925-768-8195, gabe.griffith@ccbnet.org. Treasurer Peter Pardini, 12 to 14, second term, Mill Valley, California, 94941, 415-990-9202, his cell, peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. Immediate past president, Jeff Tom, 11 to question, Sacramento, California, 95831, cell phone 916-995-3967, jeff.thom@ccbnet.org. Board of Directors, Artis Bazin, Star 11-13, First Term, Burbank, California, 91504, ardis.bazyn@ccbnet.org. Vincent Calderon, Star 12-14, Third Term, Montclair, California, 91763, cell 626-429-4539, vincecalderon@ccbnet.org. Lena Dawes, Star 12-14, Second Term, Sacramento, California, 95818, cell 818-987-4325, leena.dawes@ccbnet.org. David Hanlon, 12-14, Second Term, San Diego, California, 92117, cell 858-610-0825, dave.hanlon@ccbnet.org. Page 55, David Jackson, 12-14, Fourth Term, San Francisco, California, 94127, home 415-239-1873, david.jackson@ccbnet.org. Linda Porrell, 11-13, Second Term, San Francisco, California, 94112, cell 415-577-8437, linda.porrell@ccbnet.org. Eric Smiley, 11-13, First Term, Sacramento, California, 95816, cell 707-536-7965, eric.smiley@ccbnet.org. Robert Wendt, 11-13, First Term, Long Beach, California, 90814, home 562-438-7100. robert.wendt@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, 11-13, First Term, San Leandro, California, 94577, home 510-357-1844. judy.wilkinson@ccbnet.org. Publications Committee, Linda Porrell, Chair, San Francisco, California, 94112, cell 415-577-8437, linda.porrell@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, San Leandro, California, 94577, home 510-357-1844, editor@ccbnet.org. Annette Carter, Clovis, California, 93611, annette.carter@ccbnet.org. Laura Lee Kastner, Oakland, California, 94611, lori.castner@ccbnet.org. Evelyn Drury, Ramona, California, 92065, evelyn.drewry@ccbnet.org. Susan Glass, Saratoga, California, 95070, susan.glass@ccbnet.org. Page 56, Roger Peterson, Mountain View, California, 94040, 650-969-1688, roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Bonnie Rennie, Santa Ana, California, 92705, bonnie.renni@ccbnet.org. Donna Sanchez, San Jose, California, 95128, donna.sanchez@ccbnet.org. Peter Schellen, San Luis Obispo, California 93401, peter.schellin@ccbnet.org. Catherine Schmidt Whitaker, Diamond Bar, California 91765, catherine.schmidt@ccbnet.org. Lynn Layard, Large Print Layout, Berkeley, California 94705, lynne.laird@ccbnet.org. Technical Operations Group, webmaster@ccbnet.org. Steve Aminoff, Greg Fowler, Jeremy Johansson, Mike Keithley, Phil Obregon. Facebook and Twitter, Tom Randall.